Welcome to the Tales of an African Princess in America podcast. My name is Uzi. I created this podcast to talk about amazing Africans who are doing wonderful things all around the globe. These are everyday people like you and I who are making a difference in the fields of business, science, and the arts, and living their lives to the fullest. I really hope that they inspire you as they have inspired me. So sit back and enjoy every single episode because it's made with lots of love. Hi guys, it's Black History Month, and as you know on the podcast, I love to celebrate African immigrants who are doing amazing things around the world. And because it's Black History Month, I'm celebrating an amazing lady who pretty much walked her way from grass to grace. It's such a compelling story. You know, when I met Dr. Addie, FYI, I met her on Instagram. I read about her story and I was like, wow. It's just so inspirational. Dr. Addy is a Nigerian-Canadian advanced manufacturing technical advisor for Cummins Incorporated, Indiana. She specializes in metal and plastic additive manufacturing, also known as 3D printing. She sits on the board of several organizations, including one that she founded herself, STEM Hub, which really is a nonprofit organization that promotes engagement of minorities and females in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Dr. Addy was recently recognized as one of the notable immigrants in Canada. She's so accomplished, and she's done a TED Talk. You know, she's had several high impact journals. She's really, really accomplished. But one of the things I really love about Dr. Addy is she has a heart of gold. I listened to several interviews by Dr. Addy, but when I got her on the podcast, I got her to talk about something even more interesting. On this episode of the podcast, she'll talk about finding love with digitization. She's an expert. You know, she's a mentor to many girls. She's a career coach as well. Dr. Addy is someone that you want to have in your corner. I hope that she inspires you guys. It's an amazing lady, and I'm so proud to introduce her to you, Dr. Addy. Enjoy the episode.
Hi, Dr. Hosey. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so is it fine if I call you Addy? What does Addy mean?
Adi is a short form of Adeola. In Nigeria, all our names have meanings, and Adeola means wealthy crown. So
I really love that. So I know a lot of people say that when they come to the US or when they go abroad, because people cannot pronounce their names, they have to, you know, make it a little shorter. Was that why your name changed from Adeola to Adi, or was it something they're already calling you in Nigeria?
Actually, no. It changed because of the fact that people keep murdering my name. So.
So you decided to make it easy for them. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, welcome. Welcome again. I was very fortunate to meet you on Instagram. You had this post that went viral. Well, a lot of your posts go viral. But anyway, there was this one post that went viral. It was talking about how it's like a grass to grace story. And it ended up, you know, talking about how you got into real estate. I think you just purchased your home at that time. And someone had tagged me on the post. So I went and I was like, wow, this is amazing. You know, I love to talk about the girl child, especially because coming from Nigeria, there are a lot of people who feel like girls cannot achieve as much. So whenever I see someone who is doing really great, I feel like, you know, I want to shine the light on them. I want people to know about them. I want to know their story. And so that's really why I invited you on the podcast, to just share a little bit of that journey with us. And hopefully, you know, someone out there can learn from you. But tell me a little bit about yourself. But where were you born?
Okay, I'm Nigerian, born and raised. I was born in Ibadan, Oyo State, Nigeria. That's where I went to school. I mean, like high school. And I obtained a Bachelor's of Science in Physics from Olabisi Onabanjo University in Nigeria. Right after my bachelor's degree, I migrated to Finland for a Master's of Science. So I hold a Master's of Science in Biomedical Engineering with a major in Medical Physics and a minor in Biomaterials. And after completing my Master's in Finland, I decided to search for another place for a PhD, because since I was little, I've had it in mind that I wanted a PhD. So as a kid growing up, I'll digress a bit. My dad's cousin is a professor of nuclear physics. I had another cousin who was a clinical professor, and they both lived in the US. And my dad had their pictures on the wall of our living room and talked about them all the time. And my uncle, the physicist, is one of the pioneers of atomic bomb. So my dad would rave about him. And I was so jealous. So I told him, I'm going to get a PhD in physics, and then you can put me on the wall too. And he laughed about it and said, oh my God, this girl is so jealous. But I meant that. And I was 9 at that time. Uh-huh. So since that time, my interest in physics started growing. I wanted to study sciences because I wanted to challenge my uncle's reputation and all the work he's done. Mm-hmm. And that's how I ended up studying physics and didn't stop until I got that PhD.
Someone listening to you right now will feel like, oh my God, she's so privileged. Like, you come from a family of educated people. You've been to all these countries. Sounds like money. Is that really what it is? Or is it just that you had a dream and all the stars just aligned the right places? How did that happen? What was the transition from Nigeria to Finland like?
So I didn't grow up with money. My both parents didn't have a formal education. When I was probably 7 or 8, I started hawking pepper for my mother. We could cater for ourselves. So I've gone through a lot in my life. You know, I grew up in Mokola. At that time, it was like, you know, an advanced slum. Not really slum, but slum. You know what I mean? But it wasn't like there was money. We lived in Phase Me and Phase You and all of those things that we did. You know, but I was a dreamer. I look at the picture on the wall of our living room every day and challenge myself to get to what my uncle got to. It wasn't easy at all. I started a whole lot more than everybody else. You know, when everybody were playing, I was just, you know, studying. As a kid, I studied in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. I did everything within my power because my uncle already showed that education can truly be your compass. They didn't come from rich homes. They had scholarships. One of them was at Berkeley University and all that. So I knew that, you know, you didn't need money to get to high positions in life, that maybe education could actually take me there. So how do I become this ambition? I believe that some of the things that helped me, you know, apart from having to look up to my uncle, they never knew I looked up to them. I never met them, you know, the one in the US. Okay. But another thing that helped me was I used, at a very young age, I got to know about the internet and any little money that I have, I'll go to Cyber Cafe. I'll sit down. I hope somebody helped me open my email, adexme@yahoo.com. Mm-hmm. And I've used that email since then. I think it was open when I was like 11. So as a kid, every money I made, I went to Cyber Cafe and I would Google stuff. I would find information. As a kid, I was an information consumer. When everybody was reading novels and stuff like that, I was consuming information about different things, learning about different things as a kid. I had pen pals. As a kid in the slum, I had pen pals that lived in the US because I was busy consuming information. So sometimes I feel like I miss out on being a youth because I was searching for knowledge. Right. And everything that everybody else did, like, you know, read novels, I didn't do any of that. I was just like researching for anything else that could help me with getting to my goal, which was I needed a PhD. So I didn't come for money. It wasn't easy at all. When I moved to Finland, you know, they have a different language. I realized there were issues there. Like, I don't want my kids to leave here. The hustle continued, right? I did over 100 applications when I was looking for a PhD professor, literally. And I saved up, started applying, and I made it like a full-time job, you know, changing my SOP, changing my letter to professors, doing everything I could. And in the end, I was able to come to Canada for a PhD position. And everything I've done, I always say, begin with an end in mind, right? Mm-hmm. I began that PhD journey as a kid with an end. I wanted a PhD. That was the end, right? Pretty much every day, my motivation, my push. And I'm thankful that the stars align.
So let me talk about this, your uncle who is a physicist. And for me, I find that intriguing because my sister also studied physics. So I see a connection there. But this, your uncle is it like, you know how Niger we say anyone that is in our family is our uncle? Was it like your dad's brother, or was this like a distant family relative that you just looked up to and called uncle?
It was my dad's cousin. My grandma's sister gave birth to him, okay. But my dad grew up with them. Okay. So literally my dad didn't have brothers. So mm-hmm. They were like my dad's brothers. He grew up with them because we lost my grandma when they were little.
A lot of our listeners aren't really Nigerian, and so they don't really understand. Someone once told me, you Nigerians, all of you are related somehow, you know, because you call this one auntie, uncle. And so it's very important to make that distinction. So what was like your position in the family? Were you the first, last, middle child? And did your other siblings have the same opportunities as you did?
I am the last. Okay. I felt like everyone was given that opportunity to get a bachelor's degree, even if we have to sell anything under the sun. Well, my dad needed to sell his car. He believed so much in education, and he was going to do everything within his power to get that. Now, what happened post-bachelor's is up to you. you want to dream a little further? So I feel like we were all provided the opportunity to get our baseline. Whether you now get that baseline, it's up to you, right? In my case, I began with a hand in mind. I wanted that baseline. I wanted more. I just decided to go for it.
What really attracted you to Finland? Was it the scholarships? Because, you know, think about Finland. I also heard about Finland when I was in Nigeria. And I heard that they had these free master's programs you could, you know, get into. But I was deterred by the language. So I feel like kudos to anyone who actually went through with that, because big deal. Because, you know, how do you survive in a country if you don't understand the language?
So for me, the attraction at that point was this. So when I was researching schools, Finland was trending as the number one country in the world for education. They were like the best country in the world for engineering, mathematics, and stuff like that. I think South Korea was number two at that point. And they kind of won it like 2 years consecutively. So when I saw that they were leading in science and technology, and I researched that they have very good innovation, they're very good with technology, I thought, okay, maybe that's the kind of country I want to go, right? Like, okay, I want to go to where technology is best, so that I can immerse myself in that. That was the attraction for Finland, because I believe I had a, what they call like 2-1 in Nigeria, which is like you have an average of about 80% or higher, but not like 90%. So somewhere in the middle there. I feel like with that, I could come to the US or Canada. Mm-hmm. At that point, I was very passionate about Finland because of that. And number two, I didn't know too much about the US and all that. So I was researching, you know, you look at those rankings that said Finland is number one, South Korea number two, is number two. That's where I want to go. Anybody else doesn't matter. Yeah. So I did a little bit of research, and I saw that they had Nokia. At that time, Nokia, you know, we didn't have a lot of phones. Nokia was one of the best phones. They're located in Finland. It's a Finnish company. So all of those attracted me to select Finland as the place to go. But what I didn't know was the free education wasn't equal to a scholarship, right? The free education was just going to give you tuition free.
Pay for room and board and all that stuff.
Yes, you have to pay for everything else. But you know, when you get there and then you kind of realize, man, this is, you're gonna have to need a whole lot of money. So I wasn't really thinking in that fashion. I felt like I was gonna make it work.
Right.
But because when you're coming from Africa, we don't pay our house rent or our mortgages monthly. Everything is paid yearly. Mm-hmm. And moving there and then realize, oh my God, I have to pay everything monthly? That's a lot of money.
Right. That kind of leads me to my next question. What was life really like in Finland? Because I think it's important that people really know what it's like. A lot of times we hear free and we get so excited. You know, we don't have to pay for school and you get so excited. And then when you tell people your experience, I feel like they don't even get it. They just feel like, well, you're abroad, so you know, you're making it sound difficult. I want to go there too. But what was that experience like? What kind of jobs could you find as an international student? Did you have to learn the language? What was it really like?
So this week that's just ended, I got into hot water. What did I do? I decided to share my experience that I had in Finland, my firsthand, own personal experience. And Africans currently living in Finland got mad at me sharing my experience. And I feel like Finland is starting to look like a cult. You know what I mean by that? Like, nobody wants anybody else to know the truth. Hide everything until you get inside. Just tell everybody Finland is the best place in the world. Show them how awesome they are when it comes to technology. But don't tell them that Africans can struggle there. Right. I lived in Finland. I got free education in Finland in the best technical university as at the time when I studied there. So, and I graduated top of my class.
Okay.
When I was in Finland, I lived there for 4.5 years. And throughout the 4.5 years, a part of it was as a student. I worked as a cleaner. With the job as a cleaner, I could pay my rent. I could still save, I could still have a little bit of money at that point, which was enough for a student. I didn't complain.
Right.
But at the time, at that time, I wouldn't lie to you, and up till now, because I don't want to get into hot water, but before anybody listens to this and cuss me out, just go on Google and put racism in Finland so that you can see how many articles come up that have reported this. Some of them are from Al Jazeera News, from the European Union, and from so many different places. When in Finland, I experienced racism. I did clinical job, and after I finished school, I felt like, okay, maybe if I try to learn language, since I graduated with good grades, maybe I get a job. I went and did a 9-month Finnish language immersion program,
okay,
where we're only studying the language, and the government said, don't work, just study the language. We will give you some money every month.
Uh-huh.
We want just learn the language. I did that for 9 months. I learned the language to a point that I felt like I was comfortable speaking Finnish. Uh-huh. I still didn't get a job. It was at that point that I felt like, okay, if I can't work with the degree that you gave me for free, what's the point of staying here? What's the point? I'm a dreamer. I'm not someone, so I say to people, be thankful but not satisfied. I'm not someone who's going to get to a place and because you give me the crumbs from the table, I will be thankful and satisfied. I was hungry to do stuff before I left Nigeria. I had my career roadmap. Mm-hmm. And at that point, when I graduated from that 9 months program and I still couldn't find a job, I realized, okay, it's time to find a PhD from outside here. I can't do my PhD here. I need to get a PhD in a place where I can not only get a PhD, but I can make tangible contribution economically back to the country that invested in me.
Right.
So that led me to look outside of Finland and really focus my efforts on English-speaking countries. So I was looking at New Zealand, Australia, Canada, the UK for my PhD. Am I thankful that Finland gave me a free education? Absolutely. Why do I have the right to talk about this? Because it's my personal experience, right? Mm-hmm. I remember putting it on there and saying, I couldn't collect samples from participants in my study, right? Is that something good? It's not. When we talk about racism, it's not to lash out at people who are there. It's to let the government know that, let something change. People yeah. that you let into your country, give them some economic power to be able to pay taxes back mm-hmm. and contribute something. So for me, I enjoyed staying in Finland. I liked it while it lasted,
yeah.
but I wouldn't have wanted to go beyond that. And when I went on there and put it out there and say, hey, if it hasn't changed, don't go there. Because right. I believe if you have a strong 2-1 like I did, you have a 85% or 80% average, I know you can get scholarships in other places like the US and the UK and other places. So I would say go to where you can finish school and you'll be able to work. Hmm. Is it something that is, it could trigger people? Yes, because if someone is a cleaner and I just exposed that all we do in Finland was cleaning, please note, if you were in like IT, technology, what I heard is that today you get jobs in Finland. That if you were a nurse,
mm-hmm.
that today you would get jobs in Finland. I left Finland about 10 years ago, okay. right? So I learned that things are slowly changing, IT, they're integrating slowly, and that healthcare, they're integrating slowly. But it is my hope that they integrate people fully. Things take time, right? But it's good right. that you have the information now.
And I think it's important that, you know, you share experiences because that was your experience, regardless of what is going on right now, that was your experience and it's valid, you know? And so I think it's really important that you share that, even though it got you in a little bit of trouble with Nigerians trying to leave Nigeria and of course Nigerians in Finland. But do you think, you know how it is in the US where even if you study here, your immigration status matters a lot. Do you think that played a role where there are some jobs that you could have gotten if you were a Finnish citizen, but because you weren't, then that really deterred that process?
I don't think so. Mm. The reason why I said that is because I had a work permit, right?
Okay.
And the language that I studied for 9 months, after that 9 months, I was eligible to apply for the citizenship, right? And some of my friends did, got the citizenship and still didn't get jobs.
Mm.
And they had to also plan their exit strategy, and a lot of them moved to the UK where they could not work with their degrees, right?
Right.
So because I saw at that point that, okay, even if I get the citizenship, I still want to get a job here. I still will have to be looking at moving to the UK or somewhere within the EU. I just thought, I didn't come here for a passport. I came here with a career roadmap that can make me a subject matter expert anywhere in the world. So I didn't get the passport. I did not apply for it. I left. Yeah, I have that dignity. to not collect a passport from a country who could not give me a job. So I did not take it.
Okay, so let's talk about your relocation to Canada. So now you found yourself in Canada for this PhD program. What was the difference in, you know, life in Finland and life in Canada? Was there a really big difference in terms of the opportunities that you, you know, could get in Canada?
Yes, I would say that transition was really exciting for me. Because I was coming from a non-English speaking to an English speaking. Everything I tried to do from my arrival in Canada was positioning. From the moment I started my PhD, I was researching the job market to understand, okay, if I finish this program, will I get a job? I also, at that point, joined LinkedIn, started talking to professionals in my field who look like me to understand what is possible for people who look like me there. Right. And I realized that all of them had jobs. They just told me, hey, you need to understand that you need the skills. So when I was doing my PhD, doing a whole lot of research, I was trying to take courses to give me those skill sets that the market needed so that, that when I graduate, I can be positioned for competitiveness. I'm a Canadian and I'm a proud one. And Canada has not only become home to me, it has been kind to me as a country. You know, my heritage is appreciated as a person. My color is appreciated as a person. My technology and knowledge is appreciated as a person and celebrated. And every day, the same way I work around with my shoulder high that I'm a Nigerian, I am ready to work around with my shoulder high that I'm a Canadian, a country that welcomes immigrants with open hands and provide them a home where they will grow, they will have economic impact, and where their impact will not be relegated. Their impact, if it's a good impact, will be celebrated even nationally. So yeah, I know, like I'm selling Canada right now, but that's how we go.
That's something else I found out about you is you hold all these sessions where you give out information and you kind of tell people about the pros and cons of, you know, studying abroad. Very positive about Canada. You know, I've heard good things about Canada, but just interacting with you, I feel like now I want to live there for like a year or two just because I've spoken to you. From what is the major attraction? I mean, for, let's say, international students who are looking for master's degrees, PhD degrees with Canada. What is the most attractive thing, I guess, for international students?
So for international students, I think one of the most attractive ones is, you know, there is a path for you to become a Canadian citizen, right? Mm-hmm. So if you've studied a master's program in Canada, after that, if you have some work experience previously, or you get some work experience within Canada, you can apply for the permanent residency, and 3 years later, you become a Canadian citizen. I like that. I like the fact that there is a path for some of us, like Africans. Right. We desire like two types of passport just in case things happen, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel like Canada provided a pathway for international students for that. The other thing that I like about Canada is that you can do quality research, right? Like if you're like me, like I wanted to be a physicist, right? Mm-hmm. It was important for me to plant my face and my feet in a place where I can make a contribution to the body of knowledge of whatever I said I want to do. So I feel like Canada provide me with funding. For me, I didn't even finish my PhD before I became permanent resident because at the time when I came into Canada, there was something called PhD stream.
Okay.
So if you're a PhD student in your second or third year, you can apply for the permanent residency under the PhD stream. Okay. They place high value on your person because you're an intellectual and an erudite. So I like that. I like the fact that I could get credit for being smart, right?
Right. Okay, and so let's talk a little bit about Nigeria now, because I really want to talk in terms of what's going on in Nigeria. And of course, there are people who think that people who preach relocation to other countries are kind of stabbing Nigeria in the back. So for instance, I always talk to people about, you know, if you plan to live in the US, permanent residency over here, you know, pathway to that. And some of the questions I get, people say is that, are you encouraging like brain drain? So shouldn't people be going abroad to study and going back to Nigeria? And of course, I know that there are different reasons why people migrate to different countries of, you know, the world. But what would you say to people who say that the brightest minds are leaving Nigeria and they're, you know, going to other places when they should be going out there learning, you know, gathering whatever information they can and then going back to the country to give back in that way?
I think as of the time when I left Nigeria, biomedical engineering was just barely starting up. I had done my research and I knew that I want to get technology that was beyond what Nigeria could offer me at that point.
Right.
So it's not just about brain drain. It's about pursuit of what you need in terms of knowledge. Okay. And Africa is still developing. For Africa to develop to the level where it desires to be, it has to also be the Africans be a part of the building. The Africans that will be a part of the building, some of us have to leave the country first and go get that knowledge. So when it's needed, we can bring the knowledge back to our continent to help rebuild. So I feel like as much as it looks like they're leaving, they're going, all the brains are going. Maybe we can't really go. Why? Because I can't change my first name and last name, and I can't change the color of my skin. Uh-huh. Africa cannot leave me. It is who I am, right? Like, so if I come here to acquire knowledge, right? So when I came here, when I left Nigeria, one of the things I said is, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to get all the knowledge. I'm going to get experience. I'm going to get a foreign passport, and I'm going to come home as an expatriate to help rebuild. That was what I said.
Right.
Now I've gotten all of that. And then I asked myself, and then what, do you want to go back and rebuild? I wish to, but I'm in smart manufacturing. Africa has not gotten to a point where they need my knowledge yet, because even here in the West, they're still understanding 3D printing. Uh-huh. I feel like whenever they need us, I particularly, I'll be very happy to go back and contribute to motherland.
And I believe you. I believe you because recently with the, you know, NSAS protests where, you know, Nigerians were, you know, protesting against the, against police brutality, injustice, and they were, you know, trying to get the government to listen to, you know, the cry of the people. And it was the youth really that were, you know, at the forefront of this. I found that you were really active and you were, I would say you're one of the people on the front lines, just trying to make sure that that message really gets out there. Looking back right now, I feel like if we didn't have people who are out there who had the resources, you know, to actually impact the movement, I guess, that would be a problem, you know. So with the NSAS protest, tell me a little bit about why you got involved, even though you were thousands of miles away. You could have looked the other way. You didn't have to do it. But why was it important for you to get involved? And tell me some of the ways that you were able to help.
So as I mentioned before, even if I decided that I've left Nigeria, Nigeria is still a part of me. My name shows that. My color shows that. And I feel like when Nigeria hurts, I hurt. And a lot of us hurt back, right? Because we still have families there. Mm-hmm. And during the NSAS protest, NSAS isn't new. It's been around for a while. Okay. So in the beginning, I didn't get involved. But I was being pressured by people on Instagram. People were writing to me and saying, Doctor, are you going to look at what is going on? Mm. Are you going to join us in solidarity? And I remember telling someone and saying, what do you mean? It's not, I don't know. I don't want to be a hooligan on the road. Uh-huh. Just please leave me. I'm in academia and I work for a reputable company. I don't want to put my name on there.
Right.
But what I did was I went to check the hashtags. And then I started reading about what was going on and I couldn't sleep. 3 hours I was still reading and crying. Mm. And all my life I had used digitization to solve problems. I met my husband on LinkedIn. I believe so much in digitization. I believe I don't have to see you before I help you or connect to you or buy your products. I use Amazon for literally everything, including Ayamashe soup. I will buy it online. Immediately when that problem came, I thought, how can I use technology to solve this? How can I use technology to contribute to this protest?
Right.
So I thought about, okay, let's do online protesting. And the reason why I wanted to do that was because I saw that people were sharing a lot of videos about things. And some of them would share and say, oh, my doctor has finished, but there are still things going on. And the one that moved me was somebody being captured. And he was videoing the people who were trying to capture him. And then he videoed them until they captured him, and he kept videoing them as they were driving him. and saying that this is his location, and then his data went and finished.
Oh my God.
So I was thinking, so who knows where that guy is now? Because now his thing is finished. So I started thinking, okay, if he had data, mm-hmm. we would have been able to, it was silently recording them. They didn't know it was recording them.
Mm-hmm.
But it was recording them. And then his data went and finished. Because he was telling us my data is about to finish. And then data finished. And then we didn't see that anymore. And I'm thinking, what if they go and kill him?
Mm.
So I thought, okay, I think maybe we can give people head time so they can have data. Okay. So I felt like if we use these hashtags to put pressure by letting it go viral, it will be evident to other part of the world that something is going on in Nigeria. And at that point, people were also reporting that, oh, news outlets were not sharing a lot about the protest. So I thought, okay, we don't need them. Let's just let all this hashtag go viral. So I thought I would start to give money on my own, buy airtime for people. But over time, I realized that a lot of people in diaspora also wanted to contribute. So I became the data disburser, where I got a couple of people helping us, just disbursing data out there so people can continue to share what is going on where they have physically. And some people can continue to trend the hashtag. And I feel like that was very interesting. And then as I started doing it, a couple of days later, Don Jazzy also joined. He said he wanted to give data out. And then before we know it, a couple of people saw this was a good idea. They started giving data. And then the whole thing went viral to the extent that we have people like Jack giving us emoji and all of that. Yeah. For so I believe that the roles that diaspora has to play in developing Africa, some of them can be played remotely, right? We don't have to be there. We can help with digitization. And even without, like, even if we're not talking about protesting online, what about knowledge sharing? Mm-hmm. A lot of us are here. We have PhDs, we have all of these knowledges, and people are back home in Nigerian universities, and they're doing research that are a little substandard and very old. What if we do adjunct professorship positions where you're not physically there, but you're still advising students working to make sure that their research is up to par, is competitive, their paper will not just look blah anymore. I believe Africans in diaspora can continue to contribute, whether through protest, whether education development, whether investing our resources in Africa. I believe we can do that, at least.
That's vital. I know for a little over 2 weeks, the protest went on, and sadly, it kind of ended tragically, where, you know, lives were lost, and it was, everyone was, you know, it took us back a lot. Do you feel like you made a difference, even though the protest ended the way it did? Do you feel like your efforts were not wasted? How do you feel about the way that that protest ended?
First of all, the protest made me realize that no matter how many years I spend outside of Nigeria, that my passion for Nigeria is just unbeatable. I couldn't sleep at some nights. I was pretty fixated on the health, the safety of the protesters. So maybe I found my interest and my zeal in Nigeria because of this protest. Do I like how it ended? Maybe it's just enough. We've made our point. It's clear that if the youth want this, they will get it. We've made our point that we're not fools. We've made our point that we don't want to die anymore. We've made our point that if you give the youth small resources, they could create very good system for Nigeria. Within, I think, about 2 to 3 weeks, we had medical teams, we had legal teams, we have radio station, we have phone disbursers, we have us, the online data disbursers. In 2 weeks, without having one single leader, we had distributed leadership, and we showed to leaders what is possible. That we are not youths anymore, that we are leaders, we are movers, we are builders, we are innovators, and we don't need gigantic funding or 200 meetings to innovate. I feel like the point was made that we are ready to take over the future. And this is just the beginning. The coalition that is brewing and forming, I like to see it. I like to see Nigerians coming together with one vision to make our country better. One thing that I know for so long about Nigerians is we are not patriotic, right? Mm. People just go abroad. You don't even see flag of Nigeria in their house. You don't. When is time for Independence Day? You don't even see Nigerians putting the flag of the country in front of their homes. When is July 4th here in America? Everybody has their flags in front of their houses. Mm-hmm. They are ready to go to war and die for America. But for so long, Nigerians have just lost that patriotism. And I'm so happy that during the protest, we found it again.
Yes.
We found ourselves carrying the flags. We found ourselves saying, shoot me, I'm ready to die for Nigeria. Mm-hmm. I feel like that is the history my children need to read. And yes, it could have ended tragically. It looks like we didn't get anything done. But what we got done is finding our patriotism again. Is understanding that youths are not children, that they are actually innovators and they're ready to be leaders. Mm-hmm. And there are other things that we found, that we can actually work together, that we actually like each other. Right. You know, like Nigerians don't really think we like each other. Everybody just say, hey, you know how, don't tell anybody the truth. Mm-hmm. During this HENSAS protest, we all brought our resources out without monetizing it. Everybody put everything out for free, put every of their resources, put their specialization, put it all out for free to save somebody else, to take care of somebody else. I think I am very fortunate to have witnessed those 2 weeks, and the Nigerianism that was birthed is just awesome.
Right. Profound. I feel like I agree with every single word that you said. And it's important that we find ourselves and take pride in our nationality, because that's who we are. That's all we have. And that's really important. So let's switch a little bit and talk about something exciting a little bit. You found your husband on LinkedIn.
Welcome back to the Tales of an African Princess in America podcast.
That blows my mind, because a lot of people don't know the potential of LinkedIn. A lot of people think it's just another social media platform. A lot of people aren't even using it the right way. I feel like they're just on there sharing and resharing. But how did that happen? How do you find your husband on LinkedIn? I'm asking for a friend now.
All right. Self-promotion is very critical.
Okay.
And I feel like sometimes, because we grew up in a community that tells us, tone it down.
Yeah.
Even in our resumes, we're toning it down. Mm-hmm. On LinkedIn, we're toning it down. You're not even sharing about the work you do. You're scared that your boss is on there and you're going to see what you're sharing and going to be looking at you inside. Nobody cares, let me tell you. I think I understand the art of self-promotion, and I do well. I know how to break the internet, FYI.
I see that all the time. I see that all the time.
Yeah,
Instagram, what's the other one? Twitter, LinkedIn. Articles. I feel like you have mastered the art of just using the internet to your benefit. But yeah, so how did you meet him on LinkedIn? Like, was it a friend of a friend, connection? How did that happen?
Connected us. So, when I graduated from the University of Saskatchewan, I was the first Black person to get a PhD in biomedical engineering from University of Saskatchewan. Okay. When it happened, I went online. I got a picture with the president of the university and all the nice stuff. I went online and put it out there. Why? Because Africans weren't studying biomedical, and that's one of the future of medicine and everything related to it. So I went online and shared that, and I shared a part of my journey from being a kid and how I got here. And that story went viral. That is how people found me. Mm-hmm. My followership just went boom. A lot of newspapers carried the news. So a lot of professionals started hiding me on LinkedIn, and everybody had it in me everywhere. And he started following me at that point. Okay. And you reached out, you know, people were reaching out and saying, oh, you're inspiring, congratulations. And I would share every now and then a couple of articles when I'm working on. So I quickly, as I saw that this has blown up, I quickly updated my LinkedIn, uh-huh. put some of my, you know, all of my articles, published articles there. You know, I had a job, I work, I put out, everything was looking good, right? So if anyone is clicking on my profile, they can really literally know who I am without even talking to me. So he added me and a couple of other people. And over weeks, he saw that I would post article about 3D printing and so many different things that I was doing. And then he chatted me up. And we started chatting every now and then. He would check on me. And he asked me for my other social media platforms that were informal. Okay. So I gave them to him, and then he asked me my phone number, I gave them to him. I looked at his profile. I feel like on LinkedIn, sometimes people are so uptight. People are so uptight that if someone slides into your DM, they're trying to appreciate you, they're trying to even say, hi, how are you? Are you Nigerian? You're so uptight that you just look away, or just, you know, let's be honest with ourselves. You are human. You need to interact with people.
The connection, yeah.
Yes. Like someone saying hi to you, this is LinkedIn.
Oh. We should talk about work here.
Yeah. Thank you, so. People are meant to interact, right? At your workplace, you still have to interact with people, right? So I've seen a lot of people say this is a professional work related stuff. It is called a marketplace for a reason.
You know what? I actually heard someone say that. I don't want to check his profile because then he can see that I checked it. And I was just like, what? what's wrong with showing that you checked their profile? Like,
yeah, but you can check his profile without him knowing. You can sign out. You sign out and Google his name, and then his profile comes up, and then you look at it and you won't know who looked at it, right?
Right.
So I feel like we need to at least keep a little bit of an open mind with how we utilize LinkedIn. There could be business opportunities. There could be other opportunities. LinkedIn is a marketplace. And in a marketplace, different types of goods will be sold. And one thing I say to people is this. You don't want to find your spouse on LinkedIn, right? Uh-huh. Where else can you be able to measure somebody's salary and what they've done with their lives, if not LinkedIn?
Right.
I won't see what you have done with your life on Instagram or Twitter. But on your LinkedIn, I could literally see what school did you go. I could literally see what kind of work you've done before. Mm-hmm. I could literally see whether we have mutual friends that I can go and ask about you. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, in fact, with LinkedIn, I can look at what you do right now and go to Glassdoor and put your location and guess what your salary is, mm-hmm. right? So I feel like it's not bad to actually meet someone who you end up dating. For me, I had stuff like, oh, I want somebody to have at least a master's degree. I don't want a PhD, but I'd like you to have a master's degree. Mm-hmm. So on Facebook, on Twitter, people don't put there automatically that they have a master's degree. You'll have to probably get to talk to them a couple of times before you screen them out. On LinkedIn, it's already there, so you don't have to waste your time if you don't have your requirement, right?
Right.
And so I feel like we have to keep an open mind. You can meet your husband anywhere, right? Like, so I married Olu, my ex-boyfriend, I met him too on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. It's great. Listening to you and, you know, all that you've accomplished, by the way, you're really accomplished. Just listening to you, and I think this is a notion that a lot of people have. They tend to think that people who have PhDs are unapproachable. They're looking for the perfect, you know what I mean? They're looking for the guy who has the most amount of cash. What were some of the things that attracted you to your husband, Olu? Like, what are some of the other qualities that, you know, you were looking for?
So I'm a little rigid, right? So it was important to me that whoever I'm going to marry doesn't have a PhD like me. I don't want us to be, both of us are heavy calculating. I also feel like, I feel like opposite attracts, right? I studied engineering. I wanted someone with the skill sets I don't have. Mm-hmm. It's important to me that it's not another engineer that wants to do zero and one. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to give my kids other type of experience. So I have the notion that I don't want to marry another engineer. I'd like to marry somebody else who is a non-engineer so I can learn something new. So we don't have competition on, I know engineering, so I'm going to pry, right? If you're an engineer, I'm going to be wanting to know a lot about what you do and be giving advice that nobody sends me, right? But if you're in finance, I'll start to learn finance. If you're a medical doctor, I'll start to learn about human body a lot more. So I gain something. So I was looking for a partner that is going to be a gain, not a repetition of what I have. That was critical. Another thing that was critical to me was, I'd like you to at least be African, right? And it was important to me that if you live in Canada or the US, it's acceptable. No, nothing further than that. I don't want to be entering plane with $2,000 to go and see my spouse. I want someone with stability. You need to have your life together. If you are not a whole one, you can't be part of it too.
Right.
So I need you to already have a job, or at least be going to school with clarity that once you finish the school, there is something that will happen after that. I just want somebody a little stable, so there is no inferiority complex. There is no, oh, we have to start to help him get his life together. So I think from there that I need you to know God, right? I don't see you have to be a pastor or something, but I would like that person to at least understand that there is God and that you need to respect the fact that I would pray. I want to raise my kids in a godly way. Those are some of the things that I was looking for. I wasn't fixated on how much money you make, because I know I'm going to make a ton of that. That's why I've been working all my life, right? I wasn't fixated on other things like, well, where did you come from? You have to just be Nigerian. No, you just be Black. It's good. It was good for me. But it was important that you have your life together, you have a career going for you. It was important that you know God to a certain extent. It was important that you didn't just come from Africa yesterday. I feel like the conflict is when somebody is new, they still have to shed those.
It's a process.
Yeah. So I wanted somebody who had lived abroad for at least 5 years. Mm-hmm. So they would have been rebirthed with the American thinking or the Canadian thinking. So when I'm talking about things, they're not thinking, oh, is that the way she thinks? They already understand. This is just the way everybody thinks, right? So I wanted someone who's been here for a while so they understand the culture here and why I'm ambitious, right? Definitely a partner that will support my level of ambition was a deal breaker. Like if you're not going to, because I have big ambition, right? I needed someone who also have ambition, but is ready to tolerate that a woman is allowed to dream and dream as big as she wants, right?
I love that. I really, really love that. I love that you shared a little bit about, you know, things that you were looking out for, because a lot of times people, especially where we come from, when you get to a certain age, people feel like you can't be picky. You know, time is going. What are you doing? You have this list of things that you desire, but they're like, well, this is what is available. Why don't you just stick with that? And it's refreshing to hear someone talk about the perspective of a grown woman, like what you want versus what is out there. Not bending or not accepting just because, you know, this is what I have. You still have the right to dream. You still have the right to want the things that you want and to work with what you have. So ladies out there, the church is not the only place you can find a husband, because when I talk to people, they're like, oh, you know, there are no men in my church. And I'm just like, what have I got to do with anything? You know, you can use all the tools that you have. Use LinkedIn, like Dr. Addy has said, use LinkedIn, go out there, look up people. You know, when people send you these little messages in your inbox, open it up and read it and have an open mind. I feel like that is fantastic.
Can I add one thing, right? Digitization is changing our lives. It's changing the way we do business, the way we buy items, the way we even study. I think we should be flexible to allowing digitization to also help us with dating. Mm-hmm. If you're able to go online to look for houses when you're buying houses, and you literally saw the house online and you went and checked it out and it meets your requirements and you pay, why are you not open to also trying to meet someone and checking it out and seeing whether it meets your requirements? Apart from LinkedIn, right, I always say to people like us, like people who are in academia or people who are so accomplished that they don't go out there. They don't go to clubs. They don't go anywhere. They literally stuck at home most times. And whenever they step out there in cars, you have to let digitization help you. The different dating apps, I'm not saying that you should go and be prostituting yourself. Mm-hmm. But you have to give digitization a chance. When digitization started, people didn't like it. Some people said, oh, it's evil.
But as a learned person, you know that digitization is not evil. That's why you use Amazon to buy literally everything.
Right.
You know that you have, some of us, we found houses online and go check it out and paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you afraid of letting digitization help you with this? Please don't be afraid. And I'm also always saying to people, LinkedIn is to network, right? Networking can open streams of opportunities. It can be job opportunities. It can be dating relationships. It can be even building friendship in the head.
Right.
What are you using LinkedIn for? Are you using it to network? Or are you just putting your profile out there? You haven't even made any friend there because you are not a contributor. Mm. You don't contribute anything. You don't comment on people's posts. You don't do anything. The maximum you do is like people's posts. Like is like, is like, you know, like, you know, when here in America, we can walk past each other and I give you a smiley face.
That's a like, yeah.
That is a like. Mm-hmm. You want somebody to be your friend? Do more than that. Shake their hand. Say hello loud.
Mm-hmm.
With your comments. You know, there are some people I have them, have their stuff put on notification on, right, on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. So if they post anything, I'm reading it. If I need to comment, I'm really crystal clear and reading my comments over again. I don't want typo on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And yeah, LinkedIn also have multiple groups, right? There are LinkedIn groups, right, where professionals who are like-minded are sharing ideas. Are you a part of those groups? And in those groups, are you sharing too? Or are you commenting? Because all of those are methods to network and build relationships. And some of these could lead to love relationships. Some of them could lead to business relationships. Some of them could even get you jobs on LinkedIn. But in the end, I want you to look and use it a little more. If LinkedIn doesn't work, try the right app or dating sites or whatever. You just have to kind of try digitization. Give it a chance, please, in this area.
We're talking a lot about 3D printing, digitization. Someone out there is like, what line of work is this? Like, without, you know, giving us a master's degree in 3D printing, how would you explain your job to your grandma on the dinner table? How would you know, tell her about what you do?
It's hard, though.
I know, like, every time, I always tell people, like, the people listening to us are probably not in our field, but we really want to tell them about what we do, but sometimes it's a little difficult, but I know you can break it down to a point where we understand it. Yeah, but what do you really do? What's your day like as a, you know, 3D expert?
Okay, so I'm a 3D printing subject matter expert in one Fortune 500 company here in the US, and what I do is this. So this is the little gist about 3D printing. Before 3D printing came into existence, we've done manufacturing over the years. So you probably have plastics and metal around the house, different shapes and stuff like that. All of these were manufactured with different manufacturing techniques. So some of them were manufactured with casting, with forging, with machining. That's how those different shapes were created. The engines in your car has multiple components that were all created using those different techniques and more. So as digitization takes stuff from us, right? It's bringing new innovation in. What 3D printing allows you to do is this. So if you're thinking of a component, you can design that component on your computer using a computer-aided design software. And after designing it, you can design three types of prototypes and say, I want this one to be less weight. I want this one to have a lot of weight. You can design it, and then you can send it to a printer. That printer can be located in the same house with you. It can be located somewhere else. That printer will receive that digital file. That digital file, usually you slice it before you send it. You slice it into layer by layer.
Mm-hmm.
So you can now print it layer by layer and print that 3D digital model that you have designed. So I can print my digital design on a 3D printer to give me a physical component that I can now hold in my hand.
Oh, wow.
Some of the previous methods that were used were like machining. So machining, you take a block and then you will now slowly machine out your very nice 3D design. That means you will be wasting stuff as you are slicing and machining out the parts that you don't want. For 3D printing, you don't do that. You just print layer by layer and by layer. And when it finishes printing, majority of what is printed is exactly the model that you put in.
Okay.
Now, some of the 3D printing technology will use what is called a support structure. So the support structure are extra things to hold that 3D design in the right layout or orientation. Then you break away those support structures and your 3D printed component is ready. What I like about this technology is that instead of having to machine out a lot of waste, you no longer have to do that. So you can save when it comes to waste. Now, when you are machining stuff out, right, it's safer or it's easier for you to say, instead of machining it, I'm making it tiny. If it's going to work without me machining a lot out, let me just leave it, right? So what that means is that you can be carrying every part in a place where you could have machined it out a lot more, but it's wasting time. For 3D printing, because you don't have to machine out and carve out anything, right? You can print very lightweighted components with less amount of material and faster, right? You can take multiple components. If usually 5 components is what you need to make a tripod stand, right, those 5 components, maybe you use bolt and nut and screw the 5 of them together. With 3D printing, you can consolidate the 5 of them and print them as one single piece. So you no longer need all those bolt and nut anymore. So everything can be printed as one single piece. Because it's printed as one single piece, usually those bolt and nut area is where wear and tear starts from. So those wear and tear, they're no longer there. So there is increased durability because we don't have those edges where you have to join together. So lightweighting and also the ability to consolidate material and parts together and print them as one single piece are 2 of the many examples of 3D printing. But the easy thing is you design it on a computer, you send it to a printer, the printer prints it layer by layer, not wasting a lot of material, and you not interfacing. So you're not the one doing any work, it's just printing it, you can go to bed. So it's like a mini robot. It does the work for you once it receives a digital file. When it finishes doing its work, you go and check, is the work done? Then you remove the part, you clean the part up, and you put another part in. And it's attractive to different industries because of the different numerous advantages that it has. I just described 2 of them. I can list up to 10 that makes this technology very attractive. But it's one of the areas that is very attractive for Industry 4.0. So the future of work, we utilize the 4th Industrial Revolution technologies. So 3D printing is one of the major technologies that lies under the Industry 4.0 swim lane. And I'm very thrilled to be one of the people working on this futuristic technology. Yeah. I hope that is basic enough.
Well, it's very, very comprehensive, I would say. You know, I have a fair understanding of what 3D printing is just by listening to what you said. It's very futuristic because I feel like, yeah, Nigeria is probably not ready for this. But it has a lot of applications. I appreciate, especially appreciate that it has a lot of applications across various industries. And so it's a really important tool to have. I'm very grateful that we have experts like you right now so that when the time comes, we're ready for that and we know who to talk to. Let's talk about STEM Hub, because that's another very attractive thing about you is not only are you achieving, you're also setting up platforms where other people can achieve as well. So tell me a little bit about STEM Hub. I know that you set this organization up, you are the founder of this organization, but what is it really about?
STEM Hub is a Canadian non-for-profit, and we offer free hands-on programs to youths. What we do is, these things are free. We offer weekly, in some cases monthly, free hands-on STEM programs, science, technology, engineering, and math. The idea is to catch them young. A lot of time, we wonder, okay, why do we have shortage of Black people or immigrants in STEM? Well, we feel like if youths are allowed to get into STEM on time or to have an understanding of what is possible with STEM and the fact that STEM is not that hard. It is very practical and it's the future. And to also show them, people who look like them, who are successful in STEM, I think if we continue to do that, we will grow more champions from our community. So that's one area that we do. The second thing that we do is mentorship. So we match mentors who are establishing a career with mentees who are either new immigrants who have just landed in Canada or students who are in the 3rd or 4th year. The reason for this is because we understand that there could be a disconnect between what is being taught in the university and what you need to be competitive for a job market. So the mentor helps you understand how to position yourself, what courses to take. Lastly, we offer scholarship opportunities to students within Canada who are trying to get financial help to be able to successfully go to school. So yearly, we try to partner with companies to get some scholarships for people within the minority communities and ensure that smart students who does not have the financial backing or capability will still get a chance to get to go to school on scholarship. Those are three things that we literally focus on right now. We're always expanding our program. During this COVID-19, we expand a lot of our programs to move online. So one of the programs we adopted was skill development called STEM Skills. So almost every weekend or Saturday, we bring experts from different Industry 4.0 areas to come and provide hands-on skill acquisition opportunities for people who are trying to upskill. As we talk about Industry 4.0 and digitization taking some people's jobs, we realize that people have to either reskill or upskill. So we bring these experts who are very good in different areas to come and help us with crash courses on different areas such as data analytics, machine learning, artificial intelligence, 3D printing. So we keep finding these experts and bringing them in to help us, not only to share their experience, but to teach us the basics and good understanding of these different skills so that people can at least have a starting point or a jump start for knowledge of Industry 4.0 area. So our STEM skill programs also have a feature sometimes help such as resume editing, LinkedIn optimization, other tools that you need to completely position you for competitiveness as we navigate our career. So that is focused on professionals and people who are just graduating from school. Those are the things that we do. All of the programs are free. And I'm thankful that I'm leading a wonderful team of about 45 to 50 people who are making sure that all of the different programs are running adequately.
Well, that's laudable. That's amazing. But let me ask you a question. How are you able to do all these things? I feel like someone out there is like, oh my God, she is active all the time. And we still find you even going on vacation, creating time for your husband. How do you do it? If someone is out there thinking, oh my God, I want to achieve all these things, but I just can't find the time. I always tell people that you find the time for things that you want to do. But from your own perspective, how are you able to achieve all these things and still find time for your family?
Well, I must tell you, it's not easy. It's not easy at all. But I feel like our essence and our purpose in life should not just be getting a degree and getting a job. I think that every one of us is called to a higher place. And sometimes we don't realize that. I feel like one of my calling in life is to impact people. Yes, it's not easy. But because it's my calling, I feel like it is a must that I try to make sure that I make an impact, that if I leave this place, somebody will say, Dr. Adi did this for me. Or if my children meet you, that you would say, oh my God, was that your mom? And because of that, you open doors for them. As somebody who had really navigated a couple of countries, I have seen the hardship. I have seen how tough it is. I currently live in the US. I have an amazing job. Mm-hmm. Why should I have all of that and keep it locked in my head? Who does it benefit if I don't share it so another African understands how to navigate their career in the US? It doesn't benefit anybody if I lock the knowledge in. The knowledge we refuse to share. Mm. We only end up with us in our grave without doing humanity any good. So that is why, you know, having transitioned Nigeria to Finland, to Canada, and the US, I feel like a collective of those experiences that they need to be shared with people so that all the mistakes I have made, they don't end up making them. So that every young girl held there could see what is possible for a Black woman with an accent with no American education in America. So that every immigrant who ends up in Finland and feeling like, oh my God, it's a dead end, can look at my story and say, maybe it's not over. So that everyone who comes to Canada will understand that this place can actually deliver if you navigate. I feel like people cannot be what they cannot see. So if I stop promoting my work, So how then can they get inspired? How then can they see me? And I wanted to do this with clarity, not providing vague information. And I hope that my life sent a message across to all those scientists that scientists are not just meant to acquire a lot of knowledge and lock them down and not share, or only share them in your manuscripts. There is more you acquired beyond the manuscript. You acquire life skills while you're going through the graduate programs. Somebody is working through that PhD. That person can use a support on how to put a career roadmap together. Please help them. If we truly desire that Black life would matter, it has to start by us lifting our people out of poverty. It has to start by making Black lives matter, by raising giants who will finish their programs and be economically stable so nobody would be able to look down on them. Mm-hmm. My question to your listeners, if they're Black, is that I know you're busy, but if you leave this place today and die, what would people say about you?
That's a really good one. It's a fantastic place to end the program. But before we do, where can our listeners find you? I know a lot of people are going to want to reach out to you. Where can we find you on social media? Do you have a website? How can we reach out to you?
You can find me on LinkedIn at Adeola Olubamiji, Adeola D. Olubamiji. You can find me on Twitter at AdexMe, on Instagram at Dr_Olubamiji, or you can send me an email at info@dtechcentrics.com. Or we're building a website now. It's called dtechcentrics.com. It's not ready, you'll see it, but you can visit there, it's not ready. So where do I really check the most? I check my email a whole lot more than I check everything else. So you can email me at info@dtechcentrics.com. I also check LinkedIn. So LinkedIn and my email, they're the two parts to get me to respond fast.
Awesome. Awesome. And I'll have all these details in the show notes of this episode. So if you guys would like to reach out to Dr. Addy, of course, I'll have that information there for you. Thank you so much for coming on here to talk a little bit about who you are. I know this is just a little dent. It doesn't even encompass all that you do, because I know that you do a whole lot more than this. So excited to have you on the podcast. Thank you for sharing your knowledge. Thank you for the work that you do to impact not just Nigerians, but just anyone out there who has questions about relocating to Canada, anyone out there who has questions about how to be impactful in your job place, how to upskill and measure up, and so many other things that have to do with, you know, just your career path. Thank you for all that you do with this. And do you have any last words of wisdom? I know you said so much, you know, just listening to you is amazing. But if there's a little girl out there in Ibadan, somewhere in Ibadan, the streets, and she has this hope and dream, you know, of becoming someone that, you know, that the world will hear about, someone that will make a difference and impact. Or if you could even speak to the young Adeola, 7-year-old version of yourself, what would you say to her now that you know what the world is? What words of motivation would you give her as she's hawking there on the streets in Pepper? Like, what would you tell her about the future?
So I'm going to borrow some of Kamala Harris's words and tweak it a bit. So every person, every immigrant, every young person, every Black person, listen to me today. Dream with ambition, lead with conviction, and see yourselves in a way that others may not, simply because they've never seen it before. Yes, I want to tweak this a bit, because as you see yourself, as others have not seen you, somebody won't believe in you. Somebody will try to knock you down. Somebody will laugh at those ambitions. But I want to tell you that if you dream, please design a plan and make sure that you fight with your last breath to execute that plan. I have, as I'm talking to you, I'm crying. When I look at my life, a girl from Mokola Ibadan who used to hug Pepe, a girl who went to one of the low universities in Nigeria, a girl who ended up in Finland as a cleaner, a girl who was a sales girl in Canada during a PhD. That girl, 2 weeks ago, received an honorary letter from the Minister of Immigration of Canada and an award as one of the top 25 Canadian immigrants for 2020. That girl is the only additive manufacturing specialist in a Fortune 500 company leading in America when she didn't even go to school. Please do not let anybody tell you what you can become just because they haven't seen somebody like you become that. There is value in you. There is virtue in you. There is everything in you. And there are places where you can fulfill your dreams beyond where you are. I want to admonish you that you would use education as your compass to navigate the world. I have become my own inspiration and a global citizen because I dare to educate myself. I dare to sit in the forefront of innovation. I hope that you dream. I hope that you put a plan together. And I hope that you fight with the last drop of blood in you to execute that plan. I will applaud you every step of the way. I hope you know that I'm applauding you because I have seen what is possible. I have experienced it. And sometimes I ask myself to wake up that maybe this is a dream. It's not. Mm-hmm. It is possible. Mm-hmm. It is possible to lead. It is possible to rise above your challenges. It is possible to take your place and own it in the world. Good luck. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I appreciate you and I wish you the best in your future endeavors. We'll continue to follow your story, your progress, and hopefully in the future we'll have you back to talk about all the also amazing things that you continue to do. Thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you, Dr. Ozi. Take care.
Do you know that about one in every three people in the United States listen to at least one podcast every month? That's millions of people listening. And do you also know that every month, thousands of podcast listeners listen to the Tales of an African Princess in America podcast? Well, do you have a business, service, or event that you would love others to hear about? Then look no further. To promote your services on the podcast, send an email to talesbydrozi@gmail.com today. Or you can visit our website at www.talesofanafricanprincessinamerica.com.